All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
This is kind of weird.
What?
It's going to be great.
Welcome.
Right?
You mean the weirdness of those two guys in the corner?
No, everyone.
What? I'm not just us.
No, we're good.
All right, let's go, kids. Here we go.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Questlove.
Yeah.
Shut up!
Yeah.
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 So, ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of Questlove Supreme. I'm your host, Questlove. Hope you are doing fine. We have Fontigolo and Laia and Sugar Steve and Unpaid Bill. And our guest today is the Emmy-winning director and film. Why are y'all looking at me like there's a bunch? See, Fonte already knows what time it is.
Miss Fonte,
yeah.
So nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Don't got the coat jam,
yeah.
But it's Lisa.
Roll call,
Suprema,
Suprema roll call, Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
Glad we're not on Zoom.
Yeah.
Wop out of lubop.
Yeah.
Wop and boom.
Roll call, Suprema, Suprema roll call, Suprema,
I'm Unpaid Bill.
Yeah.
And what the what?
Yeah.
Let's talk Tutti Frutti.
Yeah.
And take it in the butt.
Suprema roll call.
It's Laia.
Yeah.
And I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
I am everything.
Yeah.
Best music doc of my time.
Roll call. Suprema.
Thanks a lot, Laia.
I mean, oh, shit.
My name is Lisa,
yeah.
And I can't rap,
yeah.
But I'm a director,
yeah.
And I'm going to tell you about some Little Richard.
I know why you left a rap label.
Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
I'm sorry, Amir.
Actually, I agree with you. It's one of the most important. Yo, no, for real, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Questlove Supreme episode. All right, how are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Yo.
I heard we had a field trip.
Yeah, I got to make a butt sex rhyme. I'm good.
Hey, yo, man. Nah, shout out. Yo, Unpaid Bill is doing some amazing shit.
Listen, man.
Oh, come on.
Listen. Straight up, man.
Sorry, Lisa.
If you don't EGOT, you're definitely going to EGOT.
All right.
Yeah. Well, nah, dude. No, first, Jam Van has showed us on YouTube Kids.
Jam Van.
It's like my favorite kids show since Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yep.
It is perfectly made for people that like to get high and watch television shows.
also it's, featuring Fonte and Laia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, she, yeah, yeah, yeah. She's killing it as the book. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that, you, yeah, I meant to give you props.
That's
you
okay,
sounded great.
This is about Bill.
Nah, so yeah, so Jan Van is great. And then his show, And Juliet, which is on Broadway, we saw it last night at the Stephen Sondheim Theater.
Nope.
I am not a musical person at all. Like ever.
I was worried.
That was my first Broadway show.
That was Fonte's first Broadway show.
That was my first Broadway show. Not my first play. I mean, I've been to play. I got culture and shit, but like, I just ain't never been on Broadway.
You've seen some Sunday plays?
You know what I'm saying? Okay. Come on. I seen Mama Done Burn Up the Chicken and, you know, Y'all Too Short the Box with whatever. But right. And Juliet, bro, we had a wonderful time, man.
Great.
Great time. It was the music of Max Martin, so it's like all like the Backstreet Boys shit and Weekend and
Britney.
By the time they got Katy Perry,
I wanted that way, and the way they used it, I was like, "Yo, that was fucking clever, man."
Yeah, and the everybody, the Backstreet's back. Shit was funny. There's gonna be. Well, I don't want to spoil it, but
wait, can I ask a question though? Mm-hmm. When you hear Backstreet's back,
mm-hmm. My prerogative.
Oh, not even. Damn, I didn't even get to that. I was going to say, are there any other thoughts in your mind? When you hear Backstreet's back?
Nah, I don't think any other thoughts.
It's only me. Only because that song is literally the reason why Kel's got a guilty plea. Because, you know, his whole thing of saying that, you know, CGI or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was fake me or whatever. Yeah. But apparently someone has TRL on. In the other room.
Oh, and that's how they knew.
And it was a Halloween episode. I guess that song debuted on, it's a Halloween
theme
video.
Yeah, because they have on their costumes and the videos and stuff. Yeah,
right. Like, and so I guess you can hear in the background, like, Special Halloween is a world premiere of Backstreet's Back. But da-da-da-da-da. So it's almost like
that's how
every time I hear that
it.
Song, yeah. I think like, wow, this is the song that finally, after years and years, is what got Kel.
I did not know that.
That was a quest for a deep dive.
Yeah, that was a deep dive. Yeah. I won't be thinking of that when I hear that song.
Sorry.
You know what I mean? I'm going to keep doing my dance and think about that.
I'll just be doing that. But nah, man, like, great job, man. The music, the show, like, we had a wonderful time, man.
I'm glad you guys got to go. Appreciate it.
It was amazing.
Cool.
And how was your experience last night?
Fantastic. I went to see New York, New York, just opened on Broadway with John Tander and Lin Miranda, and it was wonderful.
He's in it?
No, he just wrote some additional lyrics.
Okay, I got it.
So fancy, Bill.
I saw Vanessa Williams, though, who I believe worked with our guest here, and I don't know, it was quite a night.
Vanessa L. Williams?
Sure.
Okay. The right stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that Vanessa
Williams. I don't want to miss out.
Yeah.
And I got to rhyme about a butt, so I'm happy. It's a good day.
I feel you.
I'm here for it.
Yo, our guest today is Emmy-winning director, film producer, and she was part of the team that brought us, Precious. Wait, can I ask something?
We ain't even finished the intro. Okay.
how's life, Laia?
No, I just meant that part, her part. I was just messing with you. Go ahead. Ask your question, boy. It's your show.
Whose idea was it to make, like, why wasn't it just simply called Precious and not Precious, a film adaptation?
Based on a novel by Push?
Yeah. Yes.
I asked.
That was your idea?
Yes.
Why was that?
Precious was a character, but the source material was so important. And I wanted to make certain that connection was there. At the end of the day,
you can shorten it
if you want. But I wanted people to connect to the book that, you know, back in the 90s on the subway going to Brooklyn, everybody was reading Push. So based on the novel by Push.
At 30 Rock, that's always been like an inside joke where people will never say Precious. They'll be like, oh, you're talking about Precious, based on a novel by Push and by Sapphire. Like, literally, they'll give the whole biography or description of the book. And I was like, why do you guys keep saying that? And I guess it's them, like.
Credit. That's dope.
Also, because if it was just going to be Precious, I didn't think that gave enough. We worked on that film for so long to get Sapphire to give us the rights, to option it, to develop it, to write the script, to have one director, to then have Lee step in, to have cast the main character. And 4 weeks before we're going to start shooting, Lee's like, we have the wrong person. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, no, we have the right person because we're going to start shooting in 4 weeks. And then we went out and we found Gabby Sidibe. So There's such a deep history. We worked on it forever.
Oh, so she was the right person, but there was
Wait a minute,
sorry.
Let me introduce our guest first. Wait.
I said that to you 10 minutes ago. Okay.
I know that. Anyway. There's also the Apollo Theater documentary, which she was part of that production team. She also directed Remix Hip Hop Times Fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, got it. And before her life in film, she was an exec at Mercury and Def Jam. Very interesting story of how we're connected. We'll talk about that later. But I will say that her newest film, which I will go ahead and say an instant classic, and that's not Questlove hyperbole or over-exaggeration, which, of course, I'm world famous for, but I will say that it is an immensely... What?
Well, you just called yourself world famous for exaggerating, which was an exaggeration in itself. Right.
I will say that it's an immensely powerful and important film, especially where we are today, in terms of erasure, in terms of understanding that all people aren't a monolith, that we have different spectrums and different cultures and different aspects of our lives, and, you know, and basically the freedom, the fight for the freedom to be free. And I guess we at Questlove Supreme want to do everything in our power to amplify this very powerful documentary. Of course, I'm speaking of Little Richard, the full title, because, of course, No, it's called Little Richard, I Am Everything. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Lisa Cortez to
Yes, sir.
I just want to say it's so good to see you all. I listen, and I thought, these are my imaginary friends. and they're real.
We're real now.
There's no Very AI shit so. Going on in
no.
here.
No.
This is live and in person.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Before I get to your story, I have to say that you are very, very, very key and instrumental in my career. I don't know. Do you remember a conversation that you had with Richard Nichols right when? So, assuming that your years at Mercury, you were part of the Kenyatta Bell, Ed Eckstein,
Dave Gossett.
Yeah. Mm. Rejection yeah, yeah. Bullshit demos. Yeah, right. That's my favorite line. So, do you remember the story of the connection with the Roots and Mercury Records?
Yeah. Like,
all right, well, one, I want to ask what happened the day after. So I've told this story millions of times, but the shortest version is we started busking on the streets in 1992. Eventually, all of 1993, we start fishing for a deal. Winds up into, I won't say a bidding war, but we damn near went to every label. And then at the last minute, Mercury was going to be that label. And then the way that I believe the story was, when either Kenyatta Bell's assistant sent us the contracts because of our intricate spelling of our names. Three of the group members' names was misspelled, and our lawyer was like, well, instead of you guys initialing it, tear this up and have them send back new contracts with your name spelled correctly. And Kenyatta Bell's assistant was supposed to send new contracts the next day. And she forgot to do it, but not to worry. Look, I'll send it on Friday. And then you guys will get it, you know, Monday and sign. But that Saturday and Sunday is when Wendy Goldstein decided to throw her hat in the ring. Now, we had no intentions on signing with Geffen Records because we're like, it's a rock label. They don't have a staff. We're good. But we wanted the free dinner. Like, we liked the whole whining and dining, courting part of getting a record deal. So thus, you know, we did the steak and lobster thing, you know, with three to go and all that ghetto shit. And then just to mess with her, Rich and I decided to call her bruff, and we just literally like just started naming everything. Like, yo, we want, you know, Pathfinder and Three Apartments, da 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 da. Long story short, or longer, Sunday, our lawyer's like, she agreed to everything you guys asked for and more. And then we were like, but we told Kenyatta Bell we're going to sign to Mercury Records. And, you know, the price was way different because you know how much rap labels were paying back then. And Rich basically had to break the news to you guys. Kenyatta was severely depressed about this. And I believe he also spoke to you. He said, Lisa Cortez told us, Geffen Records, I hope y'all take racial sensitivity training over there.
That's my girl.
And yes. I was like, wait, what does that mean, Rich? And we... Found out in the longest 20-year lesson of our life.
Fuck around and found out ever.
Literally. And so whenever the bullshit happens, we always used to joke, Lisa Cortez told us this was going to happen. So do you know, like, what was the aftermath of that? Because, you know, we should have signed to that label. Like, you guys took us to the Legion. I think the Legion was shooting a Jingle Jangle.
Size them up from every angle.
Literally. Wow. Like, we went to the Jingle Jangle set. We met Drez and everything. We're like, oh, shit. We're going to be stars. You know, and then, you know.
Here come Wendy.
So I remember when you guys did a showcase for us.
Yeah. At SIR.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like on 50-something-something.
Yeah.
Kind of SIR, in proximity.
52nd.
And it was fantastic.
Right.
I was the VP, and I had hired all those guys. Like, yep. Dave Gossett had gotten fired at Def Jam, and I was like, come over and work with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kenyatta came in. And I didn't know this thing about the spelling stuff. See, that's the thing. When you give the keys to the car, to the kids, like, sometimes they don't tell you stuff.
They don't drive right.
Well, you know, also our parents were naming us, like, Amir, you know.
Don't do that to
No, but Malik had like 12 names.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So, Tariq Luke Montrotter, you know.
I do remember though telling Kenyatta that because I wanted to do the deal. And I wanted to support also my team. Because if somebody came to me and like, Lisa, we have to sign, and they had so much passion, they had a vision. I saw you guys, I knew the long tail. Mm-hmm. That we could make an investment in. And when I heard, you know, and it's like, I always blame it on the managers. I'm like, who's the manager? Who let this shit go down?
You gave Richard an earful.
But with grace, you know, I was born in Connecticut.
He said you did a very Claire Huxtable, like the very stern.
Motherfucker.
Right.
But I love you. Bless you. But I was just like, I also, as an executive, saw different spaces. And I knew Wendy Goldstein had a great heart, and she was there. But the ecosystem, the bigger ecosystem you were going into, it was like, you know, when working for Ed Eckstein, and the Ed story is really interesting, how we connected. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was the president. A black man was the president. He let all of us do our thing. No. You know, like, I got a tape from Red Alert. It was the Black Sheep. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to sign them. It was a real janky tape, too. But I was just like, I really like these kids from North Carolina. Let's do it.
Sanford. I did not know that.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Sanford. Yeah.
I got a tape on a spoken word artist, Reggie Gaines. I was like, I want to do a spoken word record. He's like, sure. I would produce.
Me, Five, Me also, right? Wait, didn't y'all sign?
Reggie Gaines?
Now, Me, Five, Me was RCA.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we were always kind and gentle.
Okay.
So when all of this happened, I just was like, yes, they should be here. But more importantly, I'm a prayerful person. So I was like, I'm just praying that the right people besides the one A&R person who loves this group is going to come on board. Because I know how that happened. Like, I would love things and I could not get the rest of the company on board. And then, you know, like Buju. I worked with Buju for so many years, from signing him to finally getting to Till Shiloh. And there was a lot of resistance. You know, when you're the sole A&R person in the woods going, they're the best, they're the greatest, come to the show, let's do this at retail, come on, let's get them on this tour. And everybody's going, you know, when's the new X record going to drop? It's very disheartening.
Were you, did you sign Ill Al Scratch as well?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I think that might have been someone on my, might have been Bernadette Williams, who's my assistant, and then she became an A&R person. You know, I did a record, a label deal with DJ Pooh, because I had known Pooh from, you know, back for, in my days before. And I think if we're going to Mercury, the most interesting thing talking about Vanessa Williams, is when I was at Rush, I started a company there called Rush Producer Management, RPM. Mm-hmm. And I represented, you know, the Bomb Squad, Eric Vietnam Sadler, Larry Smith, Sam Sever,
that's how they got involved with Vanessa Williams.
And so the late, great Gary Harris.
Ah, Gary.
You know.
Every conversation I ever had with Gary was always like, I don't even know how to visually describe, but he'd just be like one of those cats that would always cover his mouth like it's a casino. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like the feds is watching him. Like,
right. But he'd be like, yo, this kid named D'Angelo, like, whatever. Gary exactly. was part of the D'Angelo team at EMI, but he was at Mercury first.
Well, he was friends with Ed. He never went there. So Ed had Wing Records, and he had Tony. He had Vanessa. They were trying to blow her up. And Gary said, Joe, you need to meet Cortez. She's working with all the hot hip-hop producers. So Hank Shockley, Bomb Squad, did a remix of The Right Stuff.
Right.
And then Ed was in California. He would come to New York. You know, we'd take him to Nell's. We'd take him to The Fever, you know. And so I knew all the people out there, the producers. You know, I would sleep in the studio at Green Street. Like when we did Ice Cube's first album, the Bomb Squad.
You were there to witness that?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Jesus
H. What was
Christ.
That like? Yeah.
I'm the hip-hop zealot.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte, Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR. Wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
All right, you were born in Connecticut.
Yes.
All right, so what was your first musical memory?
Okay, I was born in Connecticut, but I grew up between Connecticut and Harlem. So I always like to put that on the map because I'm, you know, I'm kind of like Green Acres. I'm like the city and the country.
I can tell already this is going to be my favorite interview of this whole entire series. Like, oh, she just has the energy. Go ahead.
First memory. I'm down on my knees. I'm begging you, please, because I'm busted.
Ray Charles?
Yes. Okay. Ingredients in A Recipe for Soul. My mother would play that like three times, and the house would be... She had these records she would play to clean the house. And she'd be like, I pay him three times, and the house will be clean. So that was one. And then Dinah Washington, This Bitter Earth. And then there'd be an occasional show tune. So I love musicals.
Look at Bill. I love musicals.
You know, I don't.
Bill!
Said the man on his way to an EGOT.
I mean,
wait, can I ask a question? Speaking of busted,
sure.
Have you ever heard this version of Ray Charles doing Busted and then someone walks on stage to sucker punch Ray because I guess Ray slept with this woman?
No.
Like, literally, they're going, dun, 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 and he's going through the verse, and then all of a sudden, you know, the band's, you know, like on television when they messed up. Like, literally that moment, and someone's like, you a dog. You a motherfucking dog. And Ray's just like, bless your heart, bless your heart. Can someone come and get this gentleman off? Fuck you, dog. Why'd you do that to her? You dog. You dirty, disgusting dog. And then you hear like, dog, someone please come get him off me, please. Like, and my part was like, wait, why is the band letting Ray Charles get beat up? Like, that speaks more than...
Yeah, because they knew.
Right.
So, they girls, too. He already know. They knew.
And so you hear them dragging him off, like, fuck you, Ray Charles. What? And you hear him, like, faint out the door. And then I'm just, bless his kind heart. All right, two, three, and then dun, 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 and literally, you never heard of that?
Never, never.
That's, like, my favorite thing next to, like, Freddie Hubbard cursing out the band and Buddy
in, like,
Rich.
Germany. So, yeah. I've heard that.
All right, sorry. It's side note. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny when you were vamping there, I think for a kid,
right?
Even though I didn't know the lyrics, I loved the melody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why I always remember that so strongly, as that musical memory and just how it motivated my mother to get the house together.
You know what that's called? I learned this this morning. Okay, I'm doing the Sly movie. It's called Counterpoint. Where, oh damn, that Bill just literally came alive, like, huh? Hello?
I know you have to get music nerdy. I like it.
Yeah, Counterpoint. I guess Sly also took advantage of this as well, where Ray has a gospel bass, but the melody is more like a nursery rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, you know, the Reese's theory of mixing chocolate in your peanut butter and that sort of thing. So sometimes people intentionally write songs where, you know, some super funk, like Sly will do something super funky with the drums and the bass, but the horns and the melody will be like, na 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 na, like schoolyard shit mixed with funk. And knowing that, that's how you get the kids and the music heads together. So, yes.
So wait, Sly,
Counterpoint.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Did he sleep with Doris Day?
All right, so that's one of the most asked questions of this thing.
He's like, what are you talking about?
I'm like, what?
So far, I have four no's and two yeses, and the no's might have it. However, Doris Day's son, who was like Sly's engineer during the There's a Riot Going On.
That's suspect.
Was also his, Sly lived across the street from the Beverly Hillbillies house.
Oh. Okay.
This is when they went to Bel Air, but turned it real, like, hood. Doris gave Sly her BMW, and I guess that's how that rumor came. But Sly, every interview, Sly sort of insinuating, like, yeah, you know, Doris Day gave me this BMW. So, you know, they're like, wait, are you dating Doris Day? I don't know. Am I dating Doris Day?
What?
So I don't think, you know.
Because, you know, que sera. Everybody, you know, I'd be in the beauty parlor with my mother and people would be like, que sera, right. Sly, Doris Day,
So, but the thing was, I looked in 73 and I was like, okay, so Sly's 29.
Right.
Doris is 44. And I looked at her and in 73.
Hold on. Let me look
and I'd be like, all right, that motherfucker hit. So, like, would you give anyone your BMW just for that? So
pillow talk.
Yeah. So there's one person that can put their life on the fact that they believe they slept together. But the rest of the band's like, nah, I think he was just lying. Right, if you, that's, and that was his day after song, yeah, if you want me to stay.
Yeah. That's never that from.
See, I told you. She knows how to rabbit hole just like the best of us. What was the first concert you went to?
Stevie Wonder opening for the Supremes.
I thought you said the Rolling Stones, because I was like, what were you doing there?
They couldn't find a babysitter. Okay.
Oh, parent trip.
Come on, come on.
How old were you?
I was like 4.
Oh, man.
Do you have memories of it, or is it
fake? Yes. Here's the bet. It was at the bowl in New Haven. It was outdoors. It was the summer. And Stevie did like 15 encores. Mm-hmm. And I just remember my mother going, you know, I really came to see Diana Ross and the Supremes. And I was like, I like this man. I like him. So
so your mom was just like, I was a little opening act kid.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
She grew to love him. And then I had a very memorable concert with the Jackson 5 with my mother and father. And that famous memory is it was at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And my father, like all these screaming kids. And my father's like, that's when the Horn and Hardit automated restaurant was right across the street there. Wasn't, you know, the train station, all that.
Right.
And my father's like, I'll be in the Horn and Hardit having some tapioca pudding.
Cause he didn't want to come.
He couldn't take it. It was just like all these, you know, prepubescent girls screaming.
It'd be like a parent today at a BTS concert.
100%.
Like, I don't want to see that. So I'll be across the street at the restaurant. Right, exactly. What did your parents do for starters?
My mom was an aircraft engineer.
Okay.
And my dad, who's an immigrant, he's from Colombia, South America. He was a rebel, a radical, and a businessman in
Cortez.
Harlem.
In my back of my mind, I was trying to, let me figure out where,
So the whole Pacific Coast, Afro-Colombian.
Are you fluent, Lisa? Do you speak Spanish?
When I need to cuss somebody out.
When you need it.
And where's the bathroom? I mean, I think those are the most important language skills to have.
Yes.
But not busting people. Because my favorite thing is when I've hung with people that people might think like, oh, they're black or some whatever, and they'll talk shit, and then
right, and then and then you go, per un momentito,
right,
and then they go, oh shit,
right, exactly.
I'm
exactly.
Like, mm-hmm, we everywhere, baby.
So when was the moment that you were like, I want to get in the industry?
9 years old, I convinced my mother to let me go to the Children's Theater Workshop, which was a dance school run by Miss Connie, and they put on mini musicals. I'm trying to get on your next show, Bill,
thank you.
And so we did Gypsy. So you can imagine, you know, from 3-year-old kids to teenagers doing Once I Was a Schleppa, Now I'm Miss Mazeppa, you know, like, because Gypsy is a musical about a stripper. And I had been very
quiet.
Wait, yeah. You want to be in that musical?
I was in Gypsy.
I do it all the time.
Wait, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like
Stephen Sondheim, and it's the story of Gypsy Rose Lee and how her sister was going to be the star, and their mother pushed the sister forward, and then the sister ran off with one of the dancers because it takes place in the vaudeville time, and then Gypsy, they end up in a shitty show, and the mother's like, you're going to be an exotic dancer. And Gypsy goes on to become one of the famous vaudeville strippers.
It's about a fucked up stage mom.
I was in this play in like 5th grade and didn't realize.
Why are there so many kids in these plays? I don't understand. Why are y'all doing this play as kids?
At performing art, at my school, it was like from 1st grade to 12th grade. So it was the older kids, but they found like roles for like the elementary kids to play in. So I didn't realize.
So we did Showboat, we did Mame, we did Gypsy.
Mame.
Yeah.
I was Vera Charles's assistant.
Well,
my sister played Vera Charles, and they made a role for me.
Life is just a bowl of cherries.
I did hair in high school. I was hood.
Were you naked?
Fuck no.
Okay. Then you didn't do hair.
Yeah. Nah, I mean, it was a very
Afro.
A very tamed down Republican version of hair, but I did it.
You were bald.
Yeah. I grew my hair out, but like they wouldn't let us do all the nude, all that. We wasn't doing that shit.
Y'all plays a fancy.
So I found my voice. I went, my mother said,
theater
get
kid.
Your grades up.
Okay.
I got my A's and I auditioned and discovered that I could sing. And then I loved movement and performance and connecting. Fast forward the summer I was 14 when Everybody Rebels, I locked myself in my room and I just listened to Ella's Gershwin songbook, Cole Porter songbook.
Not Heat Wave, not...
Oh, of course, of course.
Not Evelyn, Isaac Hayes.
Evelyn Champagne King. Oh, wow. You know, man. I mean, my father's playing Celia Cruz. I mean, it was a lot of music. And I also read the back of albums. And I was like, who is this mixer? I would bathe myself in music. Sound bath.
You said rebelling. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, this is when, like, she discovers Bad Brains or Sex Pistols or the Ramones. And I'm like, Gershwin, your parents' dream. Yeah.
Like, but your peers are like, what the fuck?
And then I discover hip hop.
What was your first hip hop record?
I'd say it's Rapper's Delight.
Okay. Yeah. How old were you when Rapper's Delight came out?
I don't talk about age.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
I'm younger than springtime.
Oh, younger than springtime.
I got it. Okay. So how do you nuance your way into, was Maroon era Def Jam your Def Jam or Black Label Def Jam your Def
Jam?
No,
I'm Maroon. I'm 1986.
Tell me everything about it.
Okay, this is one of my favorite, how do you get in the music business when you have no connections? So I went to Yale, and when I was there, I had this incredible group of friends. One of them is a sister named Lisa Jones, Mary Baraka's daughter.
Yeah.
We were just these young, feisty kids, and we were working on a magazine that Lisa was putting together. She was part of that great crew at the Village Voice at that time, and she wanted to do a magazine called Diva de Kooning. I was into hip-hop, and I was like, I want to write about women in rap. So I talked to her stepsister, Dominique DePrima, you know, in the Bay. Mm-hmm. I talked to the sister, Tequila Mockingbird, who was kind of in the punk scene in Los Angeles. And I really love this article. And a friend of mine who worked at Spencer Beck, worked at Interview Magazine. And I told him about this article. And I was like, I'm really excited about this. Because nobody knew there was women in rap. Mm-hmm. And so he said, you should go talk to Bill Adler. He is the publicist at Def Jam. So I just called. And Bill said, come on in. So I'm just chatting with Bill. He's the most amazing, giving, knowledgeable person.
Yep.
And a guy across the room said, who did you talk to in LA? And I said, oh, Tequila Mockingbird. That guy was Lior Cohen. So 2 weeks
who
later.
Who did you talk to in LA? Right.
What are you doing
right,
here?
Right, yeah. You have to talk like him. Right.
So Tequila shows up in New York and I bring Tequila to the office. I'm a good baker. I made this ginger cake and I brought my resume. And we all hang out, body blah.
You get to tear that off, treatment.
And Jimmy Spicer was the receptionist.
What?
But Jimmy Spicer never picked up the phone at the different calls because he'd be chatting some woman up. So I didn't get the job.
Wait, can you stop? This is the second time that we've heard the story of someone charming the Def Jam staff to nuance a job via pastries. Because you also remember people. Kevin Lyles. With this girl, you know, it's true money. Every morning at 6 a.m. would buy everyone orange juice. And Lior was like impressed. Like, this guy's cleaning up the office and buying us donuts. And that's how he got a job. Like, Russell was like, get away from me, kid. But pastries. Time out. Jimmy Spicer's dollar bill, y'all. What?
So I'm this kid.
Did he answer the phone like this?
Love it when he does voices. So good.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
No.
Rest in peace, Jimmy Spicer.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I keep trying to, you know, roll up in there and, you know, impress them. And you know, it was pretty chaotic, but it was also very small. Mm-hmm. There was not that many people there. And I've went to a Luther Vandross show. I conned my way into the party backstage. Because, you know, you got to get in. Mm-hmm. You just need to make a hole. You don't even fit in. You make a space. Mm-hmm. And I run into Lior, who was friends with Shep Gordon, who was Luther's manager.
Right. That's our guy.
And LL Cool J.
Right.
And I walk up to Lior and I go, hey, you remember me? I gave you my resume on the good paper. It was like the heavy weighted paper. It was cream colored.
That mattered.
And he said, well, you know what? I actually need someone. I need an assistant. Call me. So I keep calling. And then I got him on the phone one day. And I said, he picked up because Jimmy Spicer was talking to some woman and did not pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. And I said to Lior, you know, I don't really know if, you know, you'll like me or I'll like you, but I'll come and work for you for a half a day for free. And that half a day turned into 5 years.
A lifetime.
Oh, wow.
So from 86 to...
91.
Wow. Okay, so License Deal is about to start to come out.
Yep, I was there when...
Original Concept is a
big endeavor.
Yeah.
Yep, and I was there when we
Nation
moved to 298 Elizabeth Street.
Right.
When Chuck came in and met with Mr. Bill Stephanie.
Right.
And, you know, they signed the Public Enemy.
What is Lior like then? Because the Lior we like know now is such a big... personality and
he was big.
Yeah.
Big. And well, you know what?
So he was always that person. Like the way that people imitate
a wallflower.
Yeah, the way people imitate Lorne Michaels at
right.
Like Lorne and Lior are the two most imitated execs that I know. But they always have a sort of disapproving father.
And untouchable. They're quite untouchable, like it feels like in ways, right? They sit in glass, like you can touch Lorne, but Lior and Lorne are in that way, kind of.
I know softer than Lior now. Like, Lior is like.
He's more
very
zen.
Very benevolent. Right, right, right.
Okay. He's more zen. Okay.
So.
It's that Bali effect from Russell.
Let me ask you at the time, because I know that it's hard. Like, I'm such a history buff, but, you know, I think people don't appreciate something until, like, time has passed. Like, 5 years later or 10 years later, you're like, wow, I was really. Part of the team that brought one of the biggest hip-hop records, selling records to the world, like License to Ill or, you know, that sort of thing. But, like, for you, though, are you recognizing that history is being made on the spot? Or was it just like, eh, whatever?
They became my family. Because the crazy thing is the first week my dad died when I was 15. Mm-hmm. And the first week that I went to work there, my mom died.
Wow. Oh, no.
And... you know, this small group from Russell, Lior, Heidi Smith, Bill Adler, Simone, who was our receptionist, Bill Stephanie, they, you know, they took care of me. They loved me. I remember one day I got mugged and Eric B. and Rakim, they came to the office and they heard, like, I was like, Lisa, why you got a black eye? I was like,
I got mugged.
And
I lived in
the real deal. And they were like, well, if you'd like, we could find somebody who could get for you a nice little ladylike gun with a mother of pearl inlay. Ooh. I was like,
Harlem Night style.
That's very Eric B-ish.
I was like,
that is on brand for Eric B.
That's what love looks like.
Did you say yes?
And a nice voice, too.
Pretty gun.
A very nerdy voice. Like, nothing scares me more than nerdy thugs.
You know, that's rare. I just want to tell you, as a woman, especially in hip-hop, it's rare to hear this level of feeling protected and loved and all of that. So I'm just I'm in it. I'm like,
because I also fought for them. Okay. You know, people will tell you, because this is right before everything blows up. I worked very closely with Lior putting together that Adidas deal because I actually wrote a letter to Fila. Because Houdini had a song called Do the Fila, and I wrote him a letter, and I was like, you guys need to do a deal with Houdini because they're speaking to this market. Because I was an American studies major. I like popular culture. I like seeing, you know, how we as black people start stuff that is then going to take over the world. But Fila's like, oh, no, thank you. But so then when the Adidas time came, there was a lot that had to be translated about why this group was so important. And
how much convincing did they need, though?
They needed some. There was a guy named Angelo Anastasio who saw it, and he was the advocate for it. But, you know, he was communicating with people in Germany. The music had not spread there yet. And what I learned in those days that still helps me now is about the power of community. To cross over this music, you know, we had Dave Funkenklein, who later came to work there, who was in Colorado playing this music, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. We had the car dealer, drug dealer in Houston who would play our records and bring our artists there. You know, we had Paul Oakenfold and Pete Tong were with London Records, which put out Run DMC in the UK.
Paul Oakenfold?
Yes, and they were hip-hop heads. And they would, the first
that
stop.
That Paul Oakenfold?
Yeah, Oki, yes. Wow. Okie dokie. Uh-huh.
Damn, he never, most people on the other side of the fence will go overtime to like explain their hip hop pedigree. Like we toured with Oakenfold during the Area One tour and talked a lot. He never once gave up like hip hop pedigree and da 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 da. Really?
Yeah.
Damn, Paul.
When they would come over, the first stop is they'd come to 298 Elizabeth Street. Like it was great. You know, everybody would come through there. But and then when him and Pete Tong become these dance electro people, I was like, wow. Interesting. So there was this community. There was the people from Japan there, you know, who ultimately become a part of the groundswell of the music crossing over and the ripple effect culturally. So these, you know, I remember we went to London and I, you know, would make myself the European tour manager so I could get a little holiday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got kicked out of a hotel and or people didn't the food they wanted. And I would just like be like, no, you cannot treat these guys this way.
So you loved
them. I love them mm-hmm. then. I love them now because I recognized how ground. I didn't maybe knew what I was in, but I knew it was something exciting and groundbreaking and necessary and a part of how our narrative as Black people, we were taking it to something new. Now, how it was going to become, I didn't know that. I was young and dumb, but I knew in my heart that they had to be treasured and that it wasn't okay to be like, oh, the rapper's there. No.
Right.
These are the artists.
Yo, what's up, y'all? This is Fonte Fontigolo. I hate to interrupt this beautiful discussion we had with the great Lisa Cortez, but listen, come back for part two. We will discuss her new documentary, Little Richard, I Am Everything, while also talking about her incredible contributions to music and film. We love this interview, and we hope you're enjoying it, too. It was a lot of fun. Oh, and also, in the meantime, go stream that new Little Richard doc available everywhere. It is a beautiful film. I think y'all will really like it. Appreciate y'all. All right? Peace.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.